Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
I think I tried to please my mother her whole life. I would never get a compliment. So it's kind of like, wow, when you get a compliment, like, oh my God, this food's amazing. It makes you feel good. Wow, I'm going to keep on going at it.
Today, we are privileged to have chef, restaurateur, proud Southie, that's South Boston for the uninitiated, and now memoirist Barbara Lynch. As the founder of Barbara Lynch Grupo, Barbara oversees 7 lauded culinary concepts, including Number 9 Park, B&G Oysters, The Butcher Shop, and Sportello, all of whom I can personally attest to their serious deliciousness, I have to say. Barbara has won 2 James Beard Awards for Best Chef Northeast and Outstanding Restaurateur. Her memoir, Out of Line, A Life of Playing with Fire, is a moving, brutally honest, no-holds-barred account of her hardscrabble upbringing in a South Boston housing project. And the cherry on top of all this is that Time magazine named her one of the year's 100 most influential people in the world. That's very impressive in 2017. Here to talk about her special sauce and so much more is the extraordinary Barbara Lynch. Barbara, we've met a couple of times, but we've never talked about the two people in the food world we have in common. Mm. Kenji Lopez-Alt, who worked in your kitchens for a few years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now works at Serious Eats. And Todd English, who we could talk for hours about.
Or not.
So good to have you on Special Sauce. This is my standard opening question, but in your case, it's particularly meaningful. Tell us about life at the Lynch family table growing up.
Oh, God, really?
That's why I said, wow, this is particularly meaningful. And maybe, I hope it's not off-putting.
No, I mean, it was pretty simple, you know, like a garden salad would be sliced cucumbers, iceberg lettuce, and tomatoes, but with a Ken's Greek dressing or something like that.
Sure.
And then there were just times where my stepfather would cook and it would just be food I just couldn't tolerate. Like, I hated stuffed peppers, and I think he knew it, and so I would feed it to Shotzi, the dog.
And was there any joy at the table?
No, I wouldn't say, because it was a really, really chaotic upbringing, and by then, most of my brothers had moved out, and it would be my sister Beth, and then myself and my younger brother.
Yeah, I mean,
and you never knew what, you know, who Beth was or what kind of shape she was going to be in. And,
really?
Yeah.
The trauma you survived growing up, I mean, and I've also survived some trauma, you know, everyone has.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents both died before I was 15.
Wow.
But reading your book, I was just like,
how am I alive?
How are you alive? It's not a fat way to put it.
Kind of, yeah.
But I mean, how do you get from point A to point B?
Part of the reason to write the memoir is like, how did I get from point A to point B without a high school education or any education whatsoever? And then now look at me, you know, I'm still in shock, especially with the Time 100. That just floored me. And then
right.
7 successful restaurants. I mean, I thought I'd always own a sub joint or.
That was the fascinating thing about the book is that you didn't have global ambition.
No.
You had the opposite. You had street corner ambition.
Right. Well, and what did I have to lose, really?
Mm-hmm.
I had nothing. So I think that was like, oh, my God, well, if I don't try it, like, what would I have to lose? And then I would always say to myself, well, I guess I'll just move to Bora Bora. And I had no idea what Bora Bora is. It was just a way of me talking myself into what I wanted to go for.
Yeah. One of the interesting things is the world you inhabited was not only full of trauma, but really circumscribed. It was tiny.
Mm.
Like you didn't go many places.
No. I know, right? I just thought, I think Italy was my first trip.
Right.
Out of the country. And I was 23.
You probably never went to Somerville.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. Yeah. No, you're right. Cambridge was exotic for me.
Right. Like, and yeah. Somerville's one town over. So it's like, that's too far.
Right.
That's a bridge too far for you.
Well, I was busy as a kid, you know? I had money to make. I had shit
to do. You were busy, but you were a handful.
You think?
That's one of my insights from reading the book, is that you were a handful. I mean, you ran with a pretty tough and fast crowd.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot in the way of traditional parental supervision.
None. Zero discipline. Yeah.
So you were making it up. Your mom was making it up.
Yeah.
And you did a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah, right. I did. Which, thank God, you know, my daughter's not going that route. She's 13. I think I did more at 13 than, oh, my God. But, you know, we grew up in the projects, and my mother could never afford camp or, you know, she was just a busy woman. And so I had a lot of free time.
You had a lot of free time,
yeah.
Which in your case, or in any kid's case, is not a good thing.
Yeah, I think half the shit I did was okay. It wasn't like brutal. Like,
right.
I didn't kill anybody. Yet.
Right.
But
yet there's that scene in the book where people did die.
Oh, God, all the time. I mean, I was so used to going to funerals. I'm like, I want to open a bar under funeral homes now. It's like crazy.
It's really funny because in reading your book, you know, there have been so many movies about Boston. I just saw Gone Baby Gone, you know, which is super dark about South Boston, right?
Yeah.
And Dennis Lehane's other books and Mystic River. I mean, there's...
Yeah. Have you read All Souls?
Yeah.
Right? So that's where I fit in. And that, you know, I mean, just every day was a new day and you'd just see, you know, for me, it wasn't any different than any other day. It's like somebody can get an axe thrown at their back or... You know, it just seemed like this is normal. It was just a way of life, I think. And even when my friends all got, you know, in a car accident, and I don't think that ever even sunk in until, like, I was in my 30s, that, holy crap, good thing I wasn't in the car.
Right.
Or, you know, it was just, but, like, half the stuff I didn't put in the book, which is...
Now I'm really wondering.
Then you'd really go, oh, my God, how are you alive? You know, I think my mother had embedded in me, like, have a pity party for yourself and then get on with it. Like, you know, it's kind of like you have a day to, like, a half a day to feel bad for yourself.
Right. Even when something...
Shake it off.
When you were gravely injured, she said that to you.
Oh, my God. Yeah, right.
I mean, there are scenes in the book where, like, you end up in the hospital and you're more worried about what she's going to say.
Yeah.
Or when she says, where are you?
Right.
You know, just like, get home,
right.
You know, and you'll be fine.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think my mother had her hands full, basically. I mean, she raised all six of us without a husband. And thank God for the radio, police radios and the crystals. And her neighbors were always, like, she slept with the police radio to know, like, when her kids were arrested or not.
Really? Oh, my God.
She was like the queen of the crystals. She had like the most.
You were surrounded by Boston mobsters.
Yeah.
And the families of Boston mobsters. Like, that was part of your everyday life.
Yeah. You learn how to be crafty. And, yeah, well, it was so funny because then this is just like 10 years, maybe 8 years ago, when a friend of mine who I used to box with came to visit me at the restaurant, and I was ordering sheets from Bloomingdale's. And he's like, what are you doing? You don't need those. I'll get you those. And I'm like, oh, no. Uh-uh. I'm not going this route. I'm not buying hot sheets out of a fucking trunk of a car, la, la, la. And then he's like, come on, they're Pertese sheets. You know, they're like $100. I was like, okay. So I tried it. And like, lo and behold, next morning, give him $100. He gives me the sheets. And I get home, and it's a fucking twin bed sheet. I'm like, I'm going to kill you. This is why... I don't want to do any of this. It's like, what do you, you know, it's like, what the hell?
Right, but that was your reality, right?
Well, that's how I lived.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you couldn't think about buying a car because, like, all you knew is, you know, riding around in stolen cars you talk about never having a license.
I never had a license, I know. And then I won, like, what, $1,400? $1,800 playing blackjack in Atlantic City, and I bought my first car.
Right.
Cash. And
right.
Then as I, you know, pulled up, there was the Andrew Auto School guy, and he's like, you shouldn't be driving. You don't have a license or insurance. And I'm like, who the fuck makes up those laws?
Right.
I mean, really? I think I told my mother, too, Mom, when you turn 16, you just automatically get a driver's license issued to you.
Did she believe that?
Yeah. But she didn't. She wasn't even on drugs. I was like, what?
So how did food become your savior?
Oh, God, yeah. I just thought, you know, if I could cook, then I'd always have a job.
That was the first thing.
That's the first thing.
And you
thing.
Always, in the book, you're always like, when you move jobs, it was always like, well, I've got a buck more an hour. Like, that's the way you judge. You know, I went from $7 an hour to $8 an hour.
Right. It was more about being paid for what you do and the dignity you would feel is like when I realized that I'm working my ass off and not getting paid anything,
right.
You know. And you have to go beg Todd for my paycheck and then you get to a point where you're like, no.
Right.
You know.
That just wasn't worth it.
Right. Yes.
Even though it
meant... Because I want to be legit. You know, you got to, you know, pay taxes and so forth. And then it's about what you're worth. And then I started to feel like I was worth more than $6 an hour.
Right.
Right.
Right. So food, if I remember... it was a home ec teacher in the book that sort of where the light went on.
Yeah, I mean, she was, like Boston in the 70s, you know, forced busing was basically rampant, chaotic.
Right.
So my high school was really chaotic. I was like a bookie in my math class. And
you were the bookie in your math class?
Yeah, I had a bunch of teachers on the...
You said that so casually. Oh, yeah, I was the bookie in my math class. I was not the bookie in my math class.
Right. And that's the only class I went to was like so I could make money. And then I would scoot out of school. And then I took home economics. And I was only supposed to take it for 1 year. But that was the class that I actually liked a lot. And I felt really comfortable in there. And so my high school teacher noticed that I had a talent. And that, you know, of course, I didn't notice it. But so she went to my guidance counselor and was like, Gilardi, if we don't get her to take this class for 4 years, she'll never finish school. And she was this really calm person in a really chaotic environment, which, like, I never even had I have never seen somebody so calm.
Yeah. And she must have stood in stark contrast to your mom, for example.
Oh, my God. Yeah, like. Somebody's paying attention to you, or
somebody cares about what you're doing.
Somebody actually likes you. That's great.
And so she turned out to be a really important figure.
Yeah, she was great, and you know, when I think that's when I started to learn how to trust somebody too. It's like, wow, somebody can be nice and not want something back.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
It's
right?
not. It doesn't have to be a mutually exploitative relationship,
exactly.
Or even a one-sided exploitative.
One-sided,
relationship.
Usually. Yeah.
And was it fun? Did you...
Cooking?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun. I mean, to the point where I'd go home and practice. And I'd make, like, a pate au choux, and I'd try to make the whole swan thing. And then I'd be like, oh, fuck this. I'm using Jell-O for the filling, you know, like the instant pudding. But, I mean, I got this bite to learn more. I just wanted to, learn more about cooking. With a learning disability is really hard.
And yet you sort of... made your way, I would say, I would call it a non-linear progression.
Yeah.
I mean, and you did have some non-food jobs, but it seemed like from the book, it was like you never derived any pleasure from them.
No. Did I talk about the one in the movie theater?
No.
You know, I worked in a movie concession, I think maybe for a month.
Right.
And only because my friend and I would just steal the paychecks and go cash them.
You were more than a petty criminal, okay? Can I just say that?
Right. Hey, listen, if the management's not around, they're going to delegate that to two concession girls. I mean, we're going to take advantage of it.
That's insane.
I mean,
but, so,
it's reality.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And yet you must have known somehow that food was going to be the path to not be in that reality anymore.
Right. I mean, there's an honesty to food. But... I think what I get most still to this day is that, you know, I'm making people happy or I'm nourishing them with food.
Which is a very generously spirited and a typical chef's impulse.
Yeah.
It's what allows you to spend all those hours doing something that other people might find exhausting and not fun.
Yeah, no, I think what I liked was the instant gratification and the gratitude towards, like, oh my God, this food's amazing. And then, you know, I've never had I think I tried to please my mother her whole life. I would never get a compliment. So it's kind of like, wow, when you get a compliment, it makes you feel good.
Right.
Like, wow, I'm going to keep on going at it.
Today's sponsor is RX Bar, a company that makes protein bars out of real food. No added sugar, no artificial colors or flavors, no preservatives, and no fillers. They're also gluten, soy, and dairy-free. In all 11 delicious varieties, you'll find simple ingredients, egg whites for protein, dates to bind, and nuts for texture. They're perfect for breakfast on the go, a snack at the office, an energy boost during a hike, and everything in between. Right now, RX Bar is offering 25% off your first order to all Special Sauce listeners. For this special deal, simply visit rxbar.com/SeriousEats and enter the promo code SeriousEats at checkout.
It was just a series of new experiences for you.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Working in food.
Right.
It's like getting words of encouragement.
Right.
Or taking some pride and somebody acknowledging the work that you do.
Yeah, yeah.
That was all new.
All brand new.
So no wonder food seems so alluring to you, the food world.
So no wonder why I opened 7 restaurants in eight years.
Let's talk about the path to those 7 restaurants. So you worked at a club.
Private club.
List all the places in food that you worked.
Well, the St. Petolf Club was a private club where my mom worked.
Right.
With her friends. And I never cooked at the club, but I was a server. And that was just a whole new world, like Dover Sole, sweetbreads under a bell. I mean, you know, in the projects, we never saw that food.
I don't think you saw that food in many places.
No, right. No, you haven't. And I just loved how Mario, who was the chef and manager of the club, ran the show. I mean, he knew exactly when to make sure that, because he was putting up, like, say, second course, 7 minutes. He knew in 7 minutes that room, they should be done eating, cleared.
And you love that clarity and that discipline because it's something you'd never seen before.
Yeah, I mean, I beg for clarity these days. I need clarity in my life, like, because I never had it, so I can't work in a mumble jumble world, you know, and he was so clear on what was going on at the club, and he could have 5 different parties going on, and then like a Rhodes Scholar meeting, and I was just like, wow, how does this guy handle all of this? And people loved him, you know, that club loved him.
And was he a screamer or no?
When I broke a lot of his new china. That was interesting. he was so short, and he's from like the Marche region of Italy. And I'm like, wow, I've never seen anybody get so red while they yell at you. You know?
But he didn't. I remember this in the book because he didn't fire you.
No, he wouldn't. He didn't fire me, but he's like, don't even come near me for 2 weeks. And my mother was like, yeah, you better get out for a little bit.
And that was the first experience serving crafted food.
Yeah, like he was a Lescoffier chef. And so, you know, I try to do the shortcut kid thing, like, oh, I can fit 12 salad plates with this beautiful salad on a tray and then put these 2 trays in a dumbwaiter with the oldest fucking building in the city. With a lot of bricks inside. And oh my God, all you heard was click, 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 shh. And I was like, ooh, something happened.
But you were really turned on by it.
Yeah. I mean, that's when I learned that I have a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And I need to listen, right?
Yeah.
Because I pretty much raised myself and would do things that worked for me and how I did it. Like, that's how I would do it. And then that was a turning point of, maybe I should start to listen.
Yeah. And so interesting. And it must have been the first time in your life somebody imposed some structure.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. He did. It's funny because with the structure and my, I mean, I've been working since I was like 12, and my work ethic is amazing, and I'm disciplined in work, but like to try to discipline myself was kind of...
Right.
Not, well, that was the last thing, you know, to learn. Yeah.
And then you ended up cooking at many serious Boston restaurants, right, over time.
Yeah, yeah.
Harvest,
yes. Garmager.
Harvest was one of the first important sort of new American restaurants in Cambridge.
Right.
And then you worked for
Todd English. And then he was it. That was it. For 8 years, I worked with him. And
you worked for...
Eight years.
You deserve, like, more than a gold watch.
Mm-hmm.
You deserve a Ferrari convertible.
Yeah, or an Aston Martin, I'll go with. You know, I think he was, for me, he was really creative. And, you know, he was a young chef when I worked for him, so he was only like 23. So he's a chef de cuisine of Michaela's restaurant.
Right.
He was such a hothead there. And then when he owned his own restaurant, I mean, Todd's a charming guy too, and he can really be a nice man. The guy like lived and breathed cooking and food. And so what I learned from him was creativity, like just be bold and like...
His food was so full flavored. I used to say, I wish Todd would just take one or two elements off the plate.
Yeah, I think
he never knew when to say when.
Right. That was a great learning point, was like, oh, why is he brining everything? Why does everything taste like smoke? And then, yeah, there were 22 ingredients on, like, one dish, but not, like, Noma, like, style.
Right.
You know, it was just a lot he just was big on flavors, put it that way.
Right.
And that was another thing I learned, was to probably simplify. Less is more, and, like, technique wasn't his strength, put it that way, but
right.
Flavors were. And
yeah,
I thought that technique is going to be key to learn for me.
And when you left... did you think you needed to learn more technique? Was that one of the things that you realized was lacking?
Yeah, technique and structure. Like, why does it have to be so chaotic? Maybe that's why I worked with them for 8 years, because I was so used to being chaotic.
Right. It was like, oh, this is kind of like home.
Yeah, it was. And what, you know, every day you just never knew what mood he was going to be like or what he wanted to create. You know, so it was kind of fun because I was used to that. But then as I was to open number 9, I realized that I wanted to learn more about, French technique in general. So I taught myself how to cook out of the Big Daddy books, you know, like the Lane Ducasse.
And La Russe Gastronomique and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's interesting because Todd's food was,
Mirepoix for him was... onion, celery, and carrots in a robo-coupe. Chop it up.
Right. You know? Right, exactly. And it was sort of his version of Italian food.
Yeah.
And one thing that it wasn't clear in the book, although you do discuss it, is like why number 9 was going to be a French restaurant, you know, or French derived.
Italian food, but
right.
Not like the big bowls of pasta that he
right.
would do.
Exactly.
Refined.
Yes.
So it's like, I like to call it like French and Italian cuisine with my twist.
Right.
It's basically like, you know, I don't want to call it a bistro because it isn't. It was like a small fine dining restaurant with my take on French and Italian cuisine. And like the Italians would never, like say for instance, the prune gnocchi, the Italians would never put
which
in,
is one of your signature dishes, the
right.
prune stuffed gnocchi.
Right. So served with prunes that have been soaked in Vinsanto as the filling and then seared foie gras sauce, which is half foie gras.
Right.
Equal parts butter, foie gras, and cream.
Yeah, because you need, with foie gras, you need to up the fat content with the butter and the cream. I understand.
You have to.
But
it's actually a very light, delicate dish.
Right. Yeah. That's the fascinating thing about right. that. But it was really very much your own food. It
yeah,
wasn't
yeah.
like, I remember were reading about Number 9 Park, and it was just like, wow, this is not like, she's not trying to do Alice Waters food or Jonathan Waxman's food or even Lydia Shire. Mm-mm. Or
I went right to it.
Or
top.
Jody Adams. You decided to go for it.
I have my carrots out there.
But what gave you the
Cannells. Cannells of steel.
That's right. That's right. In the book, you talk about cannells of steel.
Right.
But, I mean, now looking back, what did... It wasn't because you had supreme confidence.
Oh, I had no confidence.
I think after I read the book, was like, maybe she didn't think she had much to lose.
Nothing to lose. Bora Bora. Right? I mean, what did I have to lose? At least I gave it a try.
Right.
You know?
And you weren't like, oh, I'm going to start a restaurant empire. As you say, it's like, it'll be a gig and I'll make a living.
Yeah, right. And I never went in it for like the money part. I just think that it was just fun and fascinating for me. I felt like very democratic in getting people to work with you as a team. So I love being part of the team.
Right. It seemed like that restaurants gave you the family and a community that you never had growing up.
Exactly. And till this day, even my own employees feel like, you know, the Grupo is their family.
Right.
You know, and it was a good family. It's not dysfunctional. So.
Right. Yes. We should distinguish between the happy families and the dysfunctional families.
Right, right. No, we don't hide shit, you know, under the carpet. I mean, we're a good group. We communicate.
And was there a time, because I think there always is in the lifespan of every restaurant, was there a time when you opened Number 9 Park where, like, I don't know if this is going to work?
Oh, God, yeah. It's like, what the fuck did I just do, right?
Like, did you go through what I went through at Too Easy? It's like, I'm not sure I'm good for payroll in 4 weeks.
Yeah. Well, no, it was actually off. It was... Well, we had a rough opening, I think, because we hired all the best servers, and then they didn't like the way I wanted to serve, you know, have that server.
Oh, yeah, and you had that meeting. You were like...
I was like, here's the door. This is my way, and you don't like it, then thank you for coming, but see you later.
And how many of them took you up on your offer to leave?
Four left. Yeah. And good luck.
And you talk about actually, and I couldn't figure out where this came from. You actually had a handbook.
Yeah, I wrote a handbook, which means...
where did that come from?
Thank God. It came from, you know, the team that we started with.
And the need for structure, I guess.
The need for structure. And then, you know, of course, I learned how to listen more. So my opening assistant manager, general manager, was Carrie Foley, who's in the book. All over the book. She started as a host at Gramercy Tavern when Gramercy opened.
Oh, yeah.
And then she was head captain and a ninja. And so, you know, you take things from what she learned, and then a lot of it was just based on my life and ways of, like, how I wanted to be treated. And so we put a manual together and how it was important to have, like, employees first, customers second. I don't know where I came up with that, but it's almost like if you thought about what we do, it's like entertainment every night. And so if a cook or a server does not feel comfortable with what they're serving or cooking, then...
Or interacting with their fellow employees.
Employees as a team player, then this isn't going to work.
Well, you know, that was the essence of Danny Meyer's book, was that... You know, even though he's thought of to be this incredibly customer-driven restaurateur.
Say he was probably one of my biggest mentors in terms of from afar, you know, on from front of the house.
Right.
And I always felt great when I came to visit Carrie at Gramercy. It was just, I was very young and treated like a special person. And what I realized is he treated everybody special.
He did. He makes everybody feel special. Yeah. That's his genius.
Oh, he's genius, yeah.
You know, whether you work at Shake Shack, it doesn't matter.
Right.
He's one of those people that when you're with him, he makes you feel like you're the most important person
on
Earth.
And the only person in the room, you know. And that's an amazing talent.
Yes.
I wish I had that. But.
So, wow. There's so many other things I want to talk to you about, Barbara. Will you come back?
You, oh my God. Yes, for sure.
All right. Thanks so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Barbara. It's really been fun. All serious eaters should read Out of Line, which if you're like me, you will be awed and moved by. And if you're ever in Boston, go to one of Barbara's many great restaurants. B&G's Lobster Roll is a transformative eating experience,
oh God,
I will tell
that.
You. And we'll see you next time, serious eaters. So long, everybody. And thank you so much, Barbara.
Thank you.